Hello, everyone. This is K20 Innovates. This is an ecosystem of live podcasts focused on innovation in education. You're listening to Teaching Through the Metaverse with Anthony and me, Terence. So this is a series, and we're exploring how educators can use web technologies to engage and delight their students. So join us as we explore how these technologies are set to change our lives in the near future. We'll be taking insights and experience from educators around the world to make the case for open and collaborative technologies that work for learners and for educators. My name is Terence. I'm an educator based in Scotland in the UK. And Anthony is here too and can introduce himself. Feel free to jump in anytime, Anthony, now or whenever you get a chance.
Yeah. So I'm Anthony White, and I'm an educator in Kodiak, Alaska. I teach game development, 3D modeling and animation, as well as workforce and internship readiness.
Awesome. So Anthony and I are separated by an ocean, but we met through K20 educators, and we've been running various sessions since, I guess, April of this year. And we've been having a bunch of fun figuring out what the metaverse is, how it relates to education, and what we can do within what exists right now and what we want to happen in the future. And those are all the sorts of things that we want to talk about in this series of live events. So we thought the first thing that we could dive into in our first real session is, what is the metaverse, or what is the eduverse, as we're starting to call it, the education metaverse? And as Anthony and I were talking about just before we came on, there's not really one definition, not that I've seen. And so we thought it'd be interesting to talk about the definitions that we've heard of the metaverse. What is it, and why do we care? And why should anybody else care? And I guess in particular, why should educators care? Anthony, have you got a definition that sticks out in your head as something that you've seen that really struck a chord with you? Like, this is what people are going to latch onto. This is the thing that the metaverse is going to do for us.
It's so ephemeral of a term. We haven't quite identified it yet, but it combines the two words, the prefix meta and the stem verse, really just defining the concept of future iteration, or perhaps a current iteration of the internet, which is a persistent shared 3D virtual space linked to a virtual universe, pretty much. And when we look at that through the lens of education, it is really just a 3D virtual space, interconnected virtual universe for students and educators, for learners of all ages. We find that a lot of the virtual and augmented reality experiences tend to be for education, or not education, tend to be for entertainment or for advertising. Not as much in terms of educational experiences. And I know that there are organizations out there that are seeking to change that. Mm-hmm. And those are large organizations that have a lot of money or people power to create these metaverses. Our take from it, or at least my stance on it, is enabling educators to create the eduverse, enabling students to create the eduverse, putting the tools in their hands to allow them to create that interconnected virtual space.
Right. That's a really important part for me. I think that's really, really key, is that this isn't something built by a large corporation that is a tool that we have to sign up to every terms and conditions and use it exactly as they expect it to be used. I want the metaverse to be something that changes depending on who uses it. I want to have skin in the game about how I'm using it, how my students are using it, and how other educators are using it. And I think that's really key. I like it. Another thing that when I was thinking about this, how do we want to define this in this series? I try to put myself in the boots of other educators and teachers that I know. And I think right now, as we're in the birth of some of the way that we talk about these things and the way that we're going to talk about the metaverse and the eduverse. And I can really imagine some of my teacher friends out there saying, well, the eduverse, oh yeah, that's something that my tech-savvy colleague, that teacher down the corridor from me in the next classroom, they told me about that. I don't really know how it works, but I'm going to go along to the thing next week, going to sit in the sidelines, and I'm just going to watch until I figure out how to use it. Mm-hmm. I think that's how some of us are going to come across this idea. I'm going to sit in the background until I figure out just what it is people are doing in it and whether I like it or not. I'm going to maintain my skepticism, my healthy skepticism. And I think that's totally natural, and I think that's great. And I hope that people's first experience of the metaverse and the eduverse is something that really captures their attention. But it might not be, right? We might have to figure out how this thing evolves and how we get to a space where more people can use it, more people can feel the benefit of it.
Yeah, and there's so many tools out there that you can utilize mm-hmm. to build those virtual experiences. And it can be pretty overwhelming for some teachers who, mm-hmm. Are still learning their way around Google Apps and how to include that in their educational environment or sure. navigating the web. So it's really thinking about how you could break it down and scaffold it for teachers and help enable them and provide them with the tools they need to be able to help students create these experiences. What's interesting is I found students don't need too much handholding. They're kind of native to these environments. And when you introduce students to the eduverse or creating educational experiences, they adapt to it really quickly and easily. And I think it's the teachers and the adults that need a lot of the support in that.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah, I think so. And the confidence, right? I think there's going to mm-hmm. be a lot of confidence needed from mm-hmm. educators because if something goes wrong in the metaverse and something happens safeguarding wise or whatever, then yeah, you need the confidence to know that your kids are safe and or your students, whatever age, are safe.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing that when I was thinking about definitions, and especially being in a COVID world, and hopefully more post-COVID than in COVID, but constantly changing space, I was thinking that the eduverse or the metaverse is a way to get 5 times, 10 times, 20 times more people access to our museum, our center, our learning space than can come to the physical building. Right? I think the COVID has really taught us that there's these... that having to be a little bit innovative about the way that we can bring people to something that used to be a physical space where we could very easily bring people to a physical space, rethinking that and bringing people to a virtual space, into a digital space, has shown that it's in a lot of the time easier than we thought it was going to be, especially because of the stuff that's come up in the last 18 months, the technology that's really accelerated into everyday life. So I think the eduverse is, and hopefully will continue to be, a way that more people can get access to things that used to live in physical spaces. And that's not to say that they should necessarily, I think, replace those visits. I think there's a benefit to both, right? I'm not saying we should go completely virtual. I'm all for physical spaces and people getting their hands on things. Having worked in lots of STEM workshops and making STEM workshops, I love people getting into physical spaces. But I don't think we can deny that having a virtual space can really improve access to people, to educators, to resources, and to this idea of being in a virtual recreation of a space. Not necessarily a space that looks exactly like the physical space, because if you're designing it virtually, why limit yourself to make it look exactly the same? Mm-hmm. But let's bring people into that space.
Yeah, that reminds me of something I saw recently, and I wish I knew where the tweet was. And someone had said, for like virtual 3D environments, don't make them look like traditional classrooms. Oh, no, he's in here, actually. It was Alex, Planet Voodoo. He said, don't make it look like a traditional classroom environment. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, you don't, why would you do that? Like, why would you bring students into a classroom with desks and chairs when you could bring them to the moon or on the surface of Mars or under the sea or mm-hmm. in, you know, some great creative environment. So I wanted to circle back to something you had said about it not, you know, these virtual experiences not replacing, I see it as, some people call it the meat space, which I think is pretty funny. So I want to share this to the tweet onus or to this channel. I want to see if this works. So I saw this post recently, which was active gaming virtual reality in physical education class. And I thought, this is cool. Like, these are students who are using Oculus Quest headsets to play Beat Saber, and it is part of a PE class. Now, there was a lot of comments on it of people being like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you would have students do this. Like, what happened to your regular PE environment? Well, I think they forgot that this is just one part of the class. It's not the entire class. It's not every single day they put on a VR headset and that's the only thing that they do. Just mm-hmm. like when you're in physical education, you don't play dodgeball every single day. Like, you are developing different skills, and these mm-hmm. skills in particular are through a VR headset. And I applaud the educator for doing that. I think it's fantastic that they did that. So, you know, here's one example of engaging students in immersive 3D environments. And yeah, I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
Right. So I can really see this, that there's a little voice in the back of my head when I saw this, that wondered, is this a dystopian future? Am I witnessing our descent into dystopia where we put headsets on our kids and leave them to it? And that's not what I think, right? That's not, I want to make that clear. But I think that there are, I can understand that reaction. I can understand the idea that that we want young people to be collaborating. We want them to be working with other people. We want them to be able to see their classmates and their teacher. And we don't want them to be locked into what some people might think is video games, because in some people's words, video games are not education. I think that they absolutely are education, and mm-hmm. maybe not all, but certainly lots of them. So yeah, I love it. And I want to see what else is happening in that class. And, you know, I want to sort of maybe feel reassured that these kids are doing like other team sports and they're learning all those skills. But I think I'm happy to presume that they are, because I think this can be a really great part of physical education. And there's, from everyone I grew up with and from talking to young people right now, there are lots of things about physical education that are pretty miserable for some kids in school.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so if we as educators can construct a PE environment that's more inclusive, that is more exciting, and that allows kids to really use some of their own creativity and bring their own skills to it and their new skills, then I'm all for it. I think that's awesome. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that's great.
Yeah. So I shared another one to the channel. This was, I think it was Wednesday or Tuesday. It was Global Maker Day. And it was organized by folks that I see often on Twitter, and Jamie Donnelly being one of them. And she's really big in the AR, VR, and EDU space. So I unfortunately wasn't able to attend, but it seems like she did a session for teachers on using Mozilla Hubs. And Mozilla Hubs is an online space where you can create pretty much any kind of interactive 3D environment that you want. You could add images, you could add 3D models, videos, text, and you walk around the space as an avatar. They have different maps that you could utilize. in this space, and it's just a really, really powerful tool. The greatest part, I think, is that it is open source. Anyone can use it, and it's through the Mozilla. And so the tweet that I put in there was a teacher who had shared then the result of learning how to use Mozilla Hubs with her students. There's not much context as to what they had made, but you could sense the excitement in there. And the students, you know, they're utilizing these immersive spaces to create representations of themselves. And this is something students absolutely love doing. They love creating things, whatever, about themselves. And you see that in students who use Roblox or students who draw or create videos, all kinds of creative outlets. And this, I think, is one of my favorite tools that's out there, because it's really simple and easy to use. And it was just really fantastic to see it being utilized in a classroom environment.
Yeah, awesome. Certainly looking at that tweet, it's what I love about a lot of these platforms is how immersive they are, right? So, and I guess I use that word quite a lot, and it means different things at different times. But creating a space that you can be inside is something that is hugely exciting for me, and I think for students. And I see that all the time, and I think I see that in that tweet, that young people are creating something and then getting inside it. And, you know, what better way to experience education than having some, again, skin in the game. If you're creating the environment that you're learning in, then you're going to learn more effectively, and you're going to have a lot more attention into what's going on. So, yeah, I think that's awesome.
Yeah. And then in the other news, this was pretty recent. Well, not too long ago, that Fortnite had created an environment, or the people of Fortnite at Epic Games had created an experience called March Through Time, which was intended as an interactive educational experience inside one of the most popular online game platforms out there. So if you haven't heard of Fortnite, I suggest looking it up. If you play Fortnite, you know kind of what Fortnite is about, and why people play Fortnite is certainly a metaverse unto itself. I mean, they've had concerts in there, a lot of tools for creativity and people to create their own maps and their own experiences and share that out with the larger public. The ability to dress your avatar and truly make your experience unique. So they had taken Martin Luther King Jr.'s dream, I Have a Dream speech, and put it into a Fortnite experience. I think it was incredible. It was really awesome for them to take something so powerful and to be able to share that out with a larger public. And I unfortunately did not have the opportunity to explore this space, but I had seen a lot of great reviews on it. And I think it's a really great opportunity for companies like Epic Games to be able to step into that educational space, utilizing tools that students already use. Like, students are connected to this metaverse. Why not adjust it and change it so that way you can create these educational experiences with it?
Yeah, awesome. It was certainly something that I think it was brave, because I think Fortnite is one of those platforms that is very quickly associated with teenage boys blowing each other up, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, and I'm paraphrasing, and there's obviously so much going on that platform that are really great, but there's a knee jerk reaction to some of that. And I did it. You shared this with me, Anthony, and I did a little bit of looking around, and I totally agree that a really brave move, and really awesome to have that experience in there and to have us question what these platforms are for, and that they can be for many things. I did see some negative comments about the experience itself. Things like people were doing the floss, you know, and these sorts of dance moves that exist in Fortnite. And again, I'm showing my naivety about Fortnite. I've never been in the space. But that it took a while for Fortnite to sort of catch on to this, that this was happening, and that there was just a bit of a disconnect between the sort of somber environment that they'd set up in this experience, and the way that some people were experiencing it, maybe not matching that tone. And it raises these really big questions about how much of an influence should the platform have about how you experience that space. And you know, if we're relating this to, as you put it, the meat space, and if we're making a comparison to how people experience the real world, and if there was a Martin Luther King or any other event on in a public space, how do we feel about people being in that space and making noise and not and even protesting and the right to protest? So I think this is a really interesting space, and it's really interesting that we're having these conversations, and I'm encouraged by more people having these conversations and making these analogies and coming up with these, so sort of being forced into a position where they have to decide what they think about this, whether Fortnite and platforms like Fortnite should be doing this. I think they should. But how we police that, and who's, is there somebody in charge? Is there a democratic way to do this? Is there a way to set a tone that doesn't feel like you're being the authority in this as a platform? It's an interesting space to be in.
It is, and I put a link in the channel here, the spaces where one person had mentioned Fortnite turning this experience into a sci-fi nightmare, and that's kind of to the extreme, but he brings up a lot of good points, and I'm sure something that Epic Games had taken into consideration after the fact, and when they do this again, maybe make some changes to make it fit the mood or the purpose of that experience. So you had mentioned an app called Skittish. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, for sure. Let me see if I can do the same as you and bring that link into the space. I think that should work.
Can you see? There we go.
So Skittish, I've been following for a little while, and I found out about Skittish through a service called High Fidelity. And I go on about this a lot, so apologies to anybody who I've talked about this before, but I'm really into the idea of spatial audio and the stuff that High Fidelity are doing. And it's a guy called Philip Rosedale who set up Second Life. And it's the idea that the audio in things like Zoom are pretty difficult at times. And this really came to the top of my head when I was talking in a K20 event, actually, to a teacher who was a music teacher for young children. I think she taught 6-year-olds. And she said that the biggest thing she missed in Zoom school was singing with her class. And these her kids just wanted to sing together and did it every day when they were in person. But being in Zoom school at home, and you could just feel the emotion in her voice, all she wanted to do was sing with her kids, and it just didn't work on Zoom. Right. And this software, this technology called Spatial Audio, means that if you're using something that is using this high fidelity spatial audio, and I presume there are others out there, then you hear people as they as close to possible as how you would hear them if you're in a room with them. So if someone's standing to your right in a virtual environment, you'll hear them to your right and to the left and it's possible to hear multiple people at once, which was key. And so their High Fidelity have created an API where you can use their technology on your platform. And Skittish is one of the platforms that has done this. And they have created this lovely platform, which is full of 3D animals. So you become an animal. You can choose to be a lion or a penguin or a cheetah or all sorts of animals in this very cartoonish, lovely space, which has spatial audio. So it's what really interesting to me, because the space itself feels welcoming, but the technology behind it feels really solid. And being in this spatial audio space means that it for me anyway, and for people I've talked to, it's a much more relaxing experience. It feels a lot more natural. You're not stuffing as you start talking over somebody else, which I've done so many times in Zoom. You talk? No. Okay, I'll go ahead. And you've got these social cues that we've sort of developed over the pandemic that feel really out of whack with how I interact with people in person. And so I'm all for that. I'm all for finding new social cues and finding ways to exist online that feel more natural. I don't think we should have to shift so far out of the natural way of speaking and interacting with each other that we're developing skills that we never knew we needed. So this was a real revelation to me and something that I really hope gets pulled into lots of other platforms. I know some platforms have spatial audio, but yeah, long may it get better, more effective, and easier to be in. So Skittish, that tweet I put in, they had a wait list. I think that tweet says that they've just got to the end of their wait list, which is how I got to try it out. But I think it's still open. So if you want to try it out, I would recommend going to Skittish and signing up and seeing if you can create a space and pull some friends into it and just see how it feels to be in this spatial audio space. And hopefully you have the experience that I did where it's just relaxing to be able to talk more naturally with your friends who are not in the same room, but you can actually have a conversation with. And I'd love to hear all the people's experience. I think that'd be great.
Yeah. So I think this was intended to be half hour, am I correct?
I thought 45 minutes, but...
45 minutes. Okay, we have time because we have so much more to cover on here. I just want to mention real quick Roblox and that behemoth in the space. So they're set to pay out $500 million to developers who craft content for its user-generated game worlds, which is up from $70 million 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I actually shared this with my game development students yesterday as saying, like, you may not play Roblox anymore, but I know you used to play Roblox, and there was a large percentage who did, and some who still play Roblox. And it's so massively popular among middle school students, elementary, and even high school students. And I said, well, you know, you could be a game developer to make games of your own as an indie developer or working for a AAA company or something like that, or you could go the route of becoming a developer for platforms like Roblox or Fortnite or similar, where you are creating content for other users and making fairly decent money. But you brought something up in our conversation earlier that I didn't quite think about, and that was about how I guess the amount of money one could make becoming a Roblox developer. Did you want to speak to that?
Right. That was interesting to me. I read a couple of articles about how the ecosystem works. And I guess my general point about that is that we, I think, should push for legislation or policy that means that's equitable and fair. Just like every tech company needs to be thinking about making sure all users and contributors and people who are getting paid by it that's been done in an equitable and fair way. But I think Roblox has come under some complaints about the fact that only the very top creators are getting paid as something that they could live on, despite a lot of creators putting a lot of time into the platform. And so these big platforms like Roblox, I think, are in danger of creating a creator economy that is encouraging people to create as much content as they can, and content that gets them users, that content that gets seen on their front page, on their explore page, and if that is done in a way that is maybe not. How do I put this? If it's done in a way that doesn't encourage really interesting experiences, educational experiences, especially if we're bringing this into the education realm, then we're looking at things that are quite viral and quite flash in the pan. And I think creating I think these big platforms, and hopefully more platforms that come up, and you know, we know that having a variety and a competition in these things makes a really positive economy in this. So all these platforms that come up and have these sorts of creator inputs, which are highly important for not having a controlling authoritarian platform, then my hope is that these platforms find ways to get creators creating things that are of really high quality, and that we can collaborate on what quality means in different spheres. If it's in education, then we're collaborating and we're talking to educators about what they want, and we're creating conversations about this that mean that we can create things that are the best that they could be, you know, for the students and for the educators. Yeah, and I don't see that happening right now, but yeah, that's my hope for how these things evolve.
For sure, and I think there is, someone, and we'll bring you up, Tom. I would love to hear what you have to say, Tom Smith, who is currently at Roblox. So I would love to hear in a bit. We got a few more topics we wanted to cover.
We'll
open the floor, Tom,
awesome.
So we can touch upon some of these topics.
Great.
So I wanted to share, wanted to talk about like educators actually using these tools in the classroom. I shared some experience of other educators, but I wanted to share something that I've been doing recently with my game development students. We utilize framevr.io. As a space for students to create their knowledge. And I'm trying to get this back. Students are learning about the MDA framework for game development, which is the mechanics, dynamics, and aesthetics of game development. And I ask them to pick a game of their choice and analyze that game through the mechanics, dynamics, and aesthetics, so they could really be able to break apart what makes a good game. And I utilize a little bit of curriculum from eDynamic Learning, which is a nationwide CTE content provider or curriculum provider. And a lot of their projects have students make PowerPoint presentations. And I said, I am sick and tired of looking at PowerPoint presentations. So why don't you use an immersive space to create a representation of your knowledge? And it was largely an experiment on my end to see how it goes, how the students navigate the space and what they do, having never really done this before. And the results are mixed. Some students who took it very seriously and they created some really awesome space, and then some students who just kind of goofed around and were adding 3D models to the space that really didn't have anything to do with the MDA framework. So now, like any good educator, you evaluate the experience, you evaluate your lesson and make changes for the next time. Will I use it again? Absolutely. And would suggest anyone else who might be interested to take a look at framevr.io and how it's utilized. The other one was Mozilla Hubs that I'm going to be, we have a project. So we have a forensic science class where students are learning about forensic science and coordinating with the teacher. The students in the forensic science class are going to create a scene or scenario that has evidence, and they kind of set up a space on a piece of paper, have a sketch of what the scene would look like, you know, not making it like super graphic or gory incident, but, you know, they are kind of analyzing a scene, creating evidence that a law enforcement officer or detective would utilize to see like who done it in that space. And so my students in game development and my interactive media are going to take that write-up and that evidence, and they're going to create immersive spaces based off of that content utilizing Mozilla Hubs. So I'm really excited to see what the students create and how they kind of represent that space, utilizing the tools in Mozilla Hubs. And definitely we'll be sharing that and the game development projects and FrameVR on my Twitter page. So feel free to look at that. And then, let's move on to
I've been having a lot of fun with mm-hmm. And if anybody doesn't know what on earth I'm talking about, mm-hmm is spelled M-M-H-M-M and is an app that provides you with a virtual camera so you have a bit more control over what other people see, so including virtual backgrounds, but lots of other features that let you present in pretty interesting ways. And I've been a fan for a while, and they released an iOS app. And it's super fun. They've called it mm-hmm OOO. I don't know if I'm supposed to say moo or what, but I guess it's out of office, so it's supposed to be a non-work version of mm-hmm. And what's interesting for me is that when you bring up your camera, it does this like green screen-esque thing where it cuts out your face and puts you on your screen, and the person you're talking to gets put on the same screen. So you're not a little box in the corner anymore. You can drag yourself around. You can make yourself bigger or smaller. This is your live active face. You can make bigger and smaller, and you can put some effects on your face as well. And I just find that really interesting. It brings up questions of where are we talking? And having a box in the corner is actually tells me that, well, I'm pretty separate from the person. It almost reminds me that I'm not in the same room as the person because I'm a box and they're a bigger box. And we're separated by the void of COVID or distance or whatever we're talking about. So I just thought that was great. I thought it was cool that you can put both your faces on the same background, and you can control what that looks like. And it's just a bunch of fun. So I'd recommend people go out and try that. They've also just released a web app. So rather than downloading, you're doing it on the web. And that is also super fun. You can put yourself in sort of Mario-esque little pods that are floating in space. You can have your face be like the DVD logo that bounces around your screen. So I highly recommend people jump into that.
Okay.
Another thing that's been really entertaining me recently as well is Gathertown. Anthony and I are both fans of Gathertown, and it's a really fun platform forming the metaverse. As I say, I'm all for lots of platforms, and you pick the right platform for the right use, and I find myself picking Gather for lots of different uses. But I created a space recently, and it asked me, is this for work or for pleasure? And because I hadn't created a space in a while, and this seemed new to me, I chose work. And it populated the whole space for me and sort of created a little tutorial for me to walk around, and I could claim a desk, and I could upload up my logo, and it would sort out how to put the logo in the right place at the right size. But then it asked me, what social space do you want? And there was a door leading to a social space, and I could pick between a speed networking session, something else, and a go-kart track. And of course, I don't know who would pick any of the other two, because go-kart tracks was the best. And you could go into this track, you could jump in a go-kart, you and your 8, 9, I think there were maybe 10 go-karts there, your 9 other friends, and you could race around a track, and there were cones in the way that you had to dodge. And it was all happening in this little gather space that was potentially your office with a little door into a go-kart track. And it really, really jived with me, and it really fell into that category of if you're rebuilding your office virtually, then why build it like an office? Why wouldn't you build a go-kart track out the door on the right, and a karaoke space and the door on the left, and whatever other spaces you want? So highly recommend you try our Gathertown as well, and try and pick a space that'll get you go-karts to race around, because it is super fun.
Absolutely. So we'll wrap up with a few experiences and ideas. If you have not heard of A-Frame, it's aframe.io, and I know some users here who are really heavy into that space. It's an open source web framework for building virtual reality experiences. It's for you to make web VR with HTML and entity components. So if teachers are teaching web development, this is really easy to transition or at least introduce A-Frame into the curriculum and have students quickly and easily create virtual reality experiences and share those out with the world through a URL. And it's cross-platform, so you could utilize it on a phone, you could VR headsets, computer, whatever. And it's really powerful, quite easy to get something set up and shared out. I've used it with my students, and we've developed experiences on Glitch, as well as Replit. And yeah, and students really love it. So one curriculum that I would suggest that's really good, it's probably one of the best that I've found, is CodeHS, and they have an intro to VR curriculum. And it's just, it's got everything you need to get students started. It's a really great learning management system and platform, and it's free to use. I mean, it's free for you to get it set up, get students into your class, and quickly creating content with A-Frame. The tech-savvy students or students who may be a little more advanced could simply go to aframe.io and look at the documentation and get started with a lot of different topics and features. And then, yeah, I'll hand it over to you, Terrence, for the other experience and ideas.
Yeah, my last thought, I think, is I've been reading a lot about no-code recently and trying out a couple of no-code platforms. And no-code is this sphere of platforms that let you build things without writing code. There's some low code and there's some no code. And some of the popular no code things around are things like Webflow, which lets you build a website without coding anything. It's a drag and drop interface. And Bubble and .io is a no code platform for building apps. And there's a bunch out there and it's growing, right? There's a huge list of no code platforms. And I suppose just as an idea to put out there, if I would hope that the world of educators and no-code educators becomes this really strong community of people who are building educational experiences for all sorts of educators and all sorts of students around the world, and they're getting the no-code tools they need to do that. So this idea of having control over your own virtual environments, your own metaverse or your own eduverse, as educators and as students, I really hope that the no-code platforms out there can facilitate that. And I'm really excited for that future where we can, as educators, not have to dive into textbooks full of C++ or Java in order to code our own experiences, that we can pull our experiences and really dial down into exactly what we want out of our journey into the digestive system, where we're bringing our students into some sort of environment where we're getting pelted with stomach acid, or we are going to Jupiter and we're building this experience into it, or we're going back into the past, right? We're going back to World War II, or we're going back to the evolution of man, right? So these experiences are something that becomes easy for educators to build themselves, and I'm excited.